What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Next Gen Sales Leader Podcast. It's Ben Reed, and I'm here with Alfie Carter, who is the founder of Prospect.ai. It is an automation tool for LinkedIn, and we're going to get into exactly what it does and how it is game-changing automation on LinkedIn. There's so much to talk about, especially with what's happening with LinkedIn. They are cracking down on founders. They're cracking down on automation. And I know that, Alfie, you have been directly impacted by this, so I want to get directly into that controversy and drama because it's exciting, it's interesting, at least if you're in the outbound B2B world. But welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Ben. Looking forward to it. And yes, it's been a hectic week.
So let's jump right into it. Can you just give like a 30-second soundbite on what is Prospect.ai? How does it compare to any of these other competitors? There's 1,000, as you and I have talked about. I probably used half of them in terms of automating DMs and outreach and comments and all that kind of stuff on LinkedIn. What do you guys do and what do you guys do differently?
Yeah, for sure. So like you say, there is literally 1,000. I did an ocean.io search for Drupify the other day, and it came back with like over 400 results. There's 1 million. Basically, they all do the same thing is the headline. And you can send, you know, automated messages on LinkedIn, which is great. But what you can't do is personalize the messages at the scale that the automation allows you to send the messages at. And that's the big bottleneck. And that's why we built the tool to be able to personalize the message. So you can use AI, take data from their profile, feed it in, and then use that to get super specific with the messages. And that's what it's all about on LinkedIn at the moment, because everyone is automating.
Interesting. So it's automation, kind of old school automation, but matched with the new ability of AI.
That's exactly it. It's really the first automation software that's actually using AI on LinkedIn. You know, everyone like markets themselves as .ai, you know, AI something or other. But the reality is it's just a static message every time. But with this, you can actually, get pretty personalized.
Great. And so now walk me through a use case of if I'm a founder and or a salesperson or anybody who a CRO, marketer, whoever wants to get more traction on LinkedIn. Obviously, I think it goes without saying that you need to be active on LinkedIn. You need to be engaging with people's comments. You need to be responding to people's messages. You need to be posting often. And then dealing with the world that is social interaction. So I think that's kind of a given. But assuming that I'm trying to do that right now, and I am trying to do that right now, as you know, I recently signed up for Prosp. It's been awesome. What is the use case? And where would you have people start?
Yeah. So I think, as you say, you know, being effective on LinkedIn is really an ecosystem. There's so many different parts of that. Like you say, you know, you've got the organic, the content, the engagement. And a big piece of that, you know, I would say around half of that is like the business development side, the direct going into the DMs and engaging with people privately in the DMs. That's, you know, really where the cash changes hands is in the DMs, right? You know, you have the content that's getting eyeballs on your offer, all those good things, engaging, again, increasing awareness. And then ultimately the sales happens in the DMs, right? And that's really where Prosp comes in. So there's really two facets to it. You have your like cold outreach where you're just reaching out to cold traffic, someone you don't know. And then obviously you have the warmer side, still like a kind of warmer outbound where you then reach out to people that have in some way engaged with you. And Prosp kind of takes care of both of those things. And really the value add, I think, now is that everyone's DMing on LinkedIn. So, you know, for the last like 5-10 years, you know, LinkedIn's just been a super high response platform. And that's why it works so well, because you can go send 10 messages and book a call compared to the 100 or 500 you would need to send with emails, right? And that's why LinkedIn is such a great channel. But as it's getting busier and busier, as more and more people are taking to it and realizing that, I think really where Prosp comes in is allowing you to stand out beyond that. So whilst everyone is sending these DMs, it's now the opportunity isn't sending DMs anymore. It's sending DMs that are better than everyone else's. I think that's the art. And that's really why we built Prosp, is to come in and help you achieve that, you know, top 1% DM quality with the scale of automation.
Interesting. So for context, for anybody who listens, there's going to be CROs and business owners who are not outbound experts. Although they are probably great at what they do, there's a very specific specialty of outbound marketing in terms of cold email and LinkedIn and all that kind of stuff. As we know, there's specialists in this. And so obviously you're one of them. And I'm more of a specialist now on the cold email side of things. And I can attest to the fact that in order to do pure cold outbound without, I'm talking through email, without signal-based research or very specific in-market signals that say this person's ready at this exact time, you really are working on volume. And so we see across our many clients that we have about on average a 2-3% reply rate overall. Now, we have some clients that will get a 10% reply rate. I'm talking about all the emails we send in a week. Say we send to 50,000 prospects, we send 3 emails per week, 150,000 total. We might get a 2-3% reply rate on a decent campaign, the best one, 5-6%. Of those, only about 5%. So of the original replies, that could be everything from out of office to, I'm not interested to, sure, let's meet. Only 5% of that total will actually then go on to be actually interested in meeting. And of those, about 50% will go on to book a meeting. And of those, only a certain percentage of them will be qualified. So from 100,000 total sends on cold email, you might get 5, meetings, right? I'm obviously trying to keep this simple for the sake of this discussion, the exact numbers you can work out on a calculator. But I have also felt that the conversion rates on LinkedIn with a great profile and a great message through the DMs is significantly better. So do you have a sense of what those conversion rates are, or what have you experienced personally?
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, both been doing this in our respective domains for a long time, so you wouldn't necessarily expect the same results jumping in straight away, right? But when I send 100 connections on LinkedIn, I'm expecting really anywhere between 37 and 50 of those to get accepted. So that's your kind of first filtration point. The great thing about the LinkedIn DMs is that there's no deliverability that you have to be concerned about. So that step is already, you're getting there, they're seeing the connection request, right? And then let's say you have, let's call it 40 of those people. We really shoot for somewhere between 20 and 28% on the reply rate, which is obviously insane that, one in five, one in four people are going to be responding to your message. And I think, like you say, in terms of then the next filtration of how many of those responses are positive, and then how many of those are booking calls and all that stuff, because you have this huge asset, which is your profile in the way that you've done with the email, you have your name, the domain, and that's it really, But with the profile, it's if this is a message I'm even half interested in, the first thing that's happening is they're going and just clicking on your profile. And then straight away, they're seeing your face, huge asset, banner, it's this whole sales letter really, that's just by clicking into you, you get all of this visual identity on LinkedIn. And that I think really helps to convert a higher number of those positive responses, because you have this big sales asset right behind you. And ultimately, as we all know, and as everyone's always saying, it's people buy from people. And it's here I am, here's my literally my page with my face and absolutely everything you need. So I would then say, really, of those, so we had 40 people accepting, so then we got maybe somewhere between 20-25%, so 10 people say are then responding to that message. I think if you're if you're really effective, you can book two calls of that, really two or three calls, and then it's okay, I'm sending 100 connections, booking 3 calls, which is just the input that goes into that compared to, you say, how many thousands, 10,000 emails do I need to send to get that same input? And the emails are amazing because they're infinitely scalable, right? With the LinkedIn, if you look at the total input to get the same output, it's a very rewarding platform.
Yeah, it's a scenario where the ability to get into inboxes, and in this case, DMs, is infinitely better than cold email. Because in the year 2025, we're now recording this in the middle of March, there is a real problem with deliverability of cold emails. I mean, these email service providers are getting better. Their AI is getting better, what we call fingerprinting, where they can detect AI written email better than ever before. And they have these spam filters for getting into the inbox. And so, as we all know, there's the primary and the social and the spam, and that's Google. And recently, back in October, there was the big Outlook problem, which then created the solution, which was called the Outlook loophole. And if you guys are interested in this, go back a few podcasts where we talked to Mailin's CEO and founder, who talks about deliverability. All of those deliverability problems that come with email inboxes and getting into these email service providers' inboxes goes away with LinkedIn, right? Because I don't think LinkedIn has that type of audit on the DM. Once you have a connection with somebody, and people connect because they want to build their connection, they're incentivized to connect with you if you look reasonable. And especially the more connections you get, like if I've, you know, close to 10,000 at this point, you know, the more likely somebody is to accept it. And then once you are accepted, it's like you are white labeled and you can send any amount of messages back and forth without anything.
Yeah.
So
completely. It's absolutely
wild. I'm selling myself on this right now.
he's in. He signed up. It's like I like come from running cold emails. I was running like a, you know, demand generation agency before this. And just like so many cold emails, and then it's like going all in on LinkedIn. It's like, oh God, this is amazing. It's like I'm gonna send a message and it's gonna get read. Like, and that's it. You know, it's just like, that's it. You know, it's like 88 week warm-up periods and placement emails and, you know, all that stuff just completely goes away. And it's like, yeah, it's awesome. And like you say, it's an authority thing as well that you can't have with the email, you know, like, I guess like, you know, in the cold email side, if you had like an apple.com domain, you know, that's what it would look like. But when you have like a great profile and the follower count helps, the way, you know, everything about the way the profile looks, you know, if it's set up to be professional and clean, then, you know, it's just like, it's people are always going to accept that. And like you say, because people are like metric driven, like vanity metric driven, it's like, oh, you know, one extra connection, that's going to look nice, you know, like on my numbers, right? So it's like, you're always going to accept, like people are even accepting requests, knowing they're about to get a message, knowing they're going to ignore it, but that's still an extra connection, right? And then the more connections they have, the easier it is for them to then go and connect with people. And it's this, yeah, it's a crazy cycle, but it's like, it's just, it's easy thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's the show me the incentive and I'll show you the outcome. What was that, Charlie Munger or was that Warren Buffett? I can't remember. But the idea here is that the system of connecting with people is incentivized by basic human need to be in community and accepted. I'm just speaking about social media in general. But cold email is faceless. There's ESPs coming after you, email service providers coming after you every single day. I think there's a natural annoyance that comes with cold email of like, I'm trying to do work and there's this random jerk who's now emailing me out of the blue. And so I think I always think about believability and trust factors. And I think that one of my old copywriting gurus back in the day used to say the number one reason people don't buy from you is they don't believe you. And part of believability is just about innate trust. And the question is, well, where does trust come from, right? Where does human trust come from? It's a real deep question, actually. And clearly there is some level of signals around a person that demonstrate trust. It's kind of like, why does a brand build trust? As you look at a logo and you're like, oh, that I trust that, right? When you see, you know, the Amazon logo, how does it make you feel? Or when you see a person's face, how does it make you feel? And I think the trend right now, at least in the AI world, is that it's going even more human, more personality. That's why the influencers are making so much money right now, is because as things become more fake and more AI driven and everything can be just kind of bullshit, people are looking for real, genuine human connection and trust. And so the LinkedIn profile serves as a very interesting place for that professionally, because you can see people's content before they ever say anything. You can see how many people are liking and responding. You can actually digest the correspondence before you ever do anything with that person. But in addition to that, you have this innate interest in just being like, okay, even if I don't like this person, sure, come on in. You know, you make me look better just by being connected.
Yeah.
So the whole game is made to make connection, whereas cold email is the opposite. And so that's where it's very interesting to me.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about what you say there is like what makes someone trust someone. And there's so many like very subtle cues that happen on LinkedIn, you know, to do with just like the quality of the headshot and like the number of colors that you have on your banner and like what colors you're using and all that, like, you know, the length of your name. And it's like, you know, when you look at like the numbers about like different regions to different regions, acceptance rates and all those things, there's so much that goes into it that are so like, that is not tangible at all. But there's something about like, you know, seeing the whole picture, like you say, you know, you have the content, you can see what they've been up to, you know, see what they're interested in, see their face, all that stuff is just, yeah, like it really becomes an asset that you can leverage. And what's so interesting about LinkedIn as well is like the 500 plus connection thing as well. You know, it's like you say, people are incentivized. They want, you know, the numbers so that they're then more authoritative, and then they can get better results. And it's like scrambling to get the 500 plus connections, at which point it just becomes 500 plus, not 437. And it's like the we see, like, you know, we track data across, like, okay, connect profiles that have less than that, like 500 plus, and the acceptance rate is just, the drop off is huge, you know, compared with those 500 plus connections. And it's just like you say, it's all about trust. It's like you have 499 connections, and it's like, absolutely no chance. Like, I'm not interested. And then the second you have 500 plus, it's like,
what have
this,
you been doing,
my
buddy?
Best friend. it's crazy, but it's it really works for you when you get it working.
Yeah, it's so interesting how a very subtle thing can literally just make it a no immediately. And I can say that even, like, if I go on Upwork, so I hire a lot of consultants off Upwork, right? Which is a place where you find, you know, overseas consultants. And I'll filter for certain characteristics, like how many hours have they worked and, you know, what kind of rating do they have? And if somebody doesn't have 100% rating, they're done. It doesn't matter if they're the best person. They just got kind of screwed by some guy who just didn't like them for that day or was having a bad day. They don't have 100%. It's just there's too much noise in the world. Yeah. There's too much distrust and too much bullshit that people need quick ways to make a determination. And I think that the better we can get as human beings at signaling trust early on, the better. I mean, frankly, even this podcast, right? It's like just the mere fact that you and I are taking the time to talk about this subject and somebody listens to it, it builds trust, because it's saying to certain people, one, these guys are interested in the subject. Two, they seem like reasonable human beings, you know? And three is they actually know what they're talking about, right? And so if you can do that, even through subtle cues of branding and color, like you were saying on your profile, it makes a huge difference. And the reason I remember years ago, I always was waiting for my graphic designer, my brand specialist to get back to me. And I was always annoyed because I was playing with brand ideas. And I became obsessed with brand and colors and brand because I realized that there was something there, if that makes sense. And I knew that having, even the reason my background looks like this, right, is because I realized you can stand out if you just go a little further than other people. And so, for example, like this blue rope right behind me, or that thing behind me, the lava lamp that's on brand, the blue colors for Next Gen, all of that was a very specific choice, because I knew that when people jump on Zoom or watch me on podcasts or engage with me in any way over online, there's immediate like, oh, this guy's different. Even if I'm not different, right? But I'm different simply because I had the thought to do it. And on your LinkedIn profile, for anyone listening, put in like the rotating banners, you know, just do a little bit, like follow a guy named Charlie Hill. He has a great idea about banners. And if you just do a little, just take 20 minutes and just do something different, you'll stand out. Get your 500 on the follower count. You know, put out a daily post, even if it's like you only take 30 minutes to do it, but it's unique to you. So there's these subtle things you can do on LinkedIn that allow you to build trust. So I'm with you there.
Yeah. I completely agree. I think, even to be like more cynical, the standards are so low now because it's so easy, right? Like it's, you know, we have like, you know, looking at different examples, like, right, I can jump on a meeting with someone halfway across the world. All I need is a phone. You know, something as simple as that, or like, oh, I don't have to turn my camera on because like no one's turning my camera on, or like, you know, those different things, like, oh, you know, don't need to be posting too much, like not going to worry about the banner, all those different things. And it's like, even the example, like, I'm sure you know that stat about, you know, if you record 20 podcasts, then you're in the top 1% of people that have ever recorded a podcast, you know, things like that. And it just makes such a big difference, you know, because it's like, because it's so easy to do so little now, because we have all of this help, like, you know, AI is such a good example of that. It's actually, I think, easier than ever to stand out. And it's like, I always bring this back, like, you know, talking about DMs, it's actually, people say like, oh, it's crowded. Like, and they say the same with emails. It's like cold email doesn't work anymore. They say LinkedIn DMs don't work anymore. They say like the channel's dead, right? But then it's like at the same time, you have people that are like, you know, on LinkedIn booking like one call for every 10 DMs they send. And at the same time, you have people that are doing like 5-10% emails while sending 100,000 a week. And the reality is, it's just like, okay, it's not more difficult than ever. It's just a question of like looking what everyone's doing. And then it's just like, there's always just worse and there's better. And it's just a question of like being the better. And even an example of that is like, like you say, with the camera and having the background, all that stuff, we've seen a notable increase in conversions when we do sales calls with our cameras on. We do like a lot of sales calls, so it's hard to always have them on. But when we have them on, people convert better because it's just like, and so many people don't turn them on because you just don't need to. It's so easy, mm-hmm. right? And that it's so easy to you know, just like get by now. There's actually even more reason than ever to stand out, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I get on a Zoom call, and I know it's coming at this point. It's kind of funny. I will start with my camera off, and then I'll turn my camera on, and you can see everybody kind of go like, Jesus. And like I've had like different comments. It's not because I'm like, you know, great or anything. It's just because it's like I'm using a ZV-E10 camera. I'm using a $500 lens. I have the whole setup, you know, set up. I have a teleprompter in front of me, so I'm looking at you through a screen. So that if I need to see them, I'm looking directly into your eyes right now, but that's impossible with a normal screen. Like if I look at my computer screen. And so these subtle things that I do signal to them that it's different, but it's just interesting because it happens at an emotional level. Like I remember this woman who I used to be on with my old camera. I wish I could change camera so you could see the difference between my normal camera and this camera. But I got on this one time, she's seen me 1,000 times and she jumps on and she goes, "Whoa, you look good." And I'm like, all I did was upgrade the camera. So it's like simple things like that make such a massive difference. And you're right. It's like, it's the same thing with like this is where automation can be both a superpower and also a real problem. Yeah, yeah. Because if you get the messaging wrong, then you actually compound a problem of being inauthentic and you lose trust. So it's this interesting thing where for me in outbound, there's 3 pillars. There is, one is the list, who are you targeting? Is it your ideal customer profile? Yep. 2 is your deliverability, can you get your message in front of them? And 3 is, what are you actually saying? And the problem is that people find a superpower like Prosp, and they think, okay, well, I can get in front of them. I know who my people are. You know, I'm getting in front of them. And then they screw it up on the messaging side. And what I think is very useful that you guys are offering is the voice stuff. So I think anybody who is decent at sales can leave a nice voicemail.
Yeah.
And so if you can take that to LinkedIn, that's actually one of my favorite features of yours because it allows me to send off the link because we use the lead bait link. And I wish we had more time because we could get into that. But we say on a LinkedIn post, hey, comment, you know, SDR, and you'll get some link, some free thing from me that I produce this content. And then your tool will go then take all the commenters on that post, turn it into a list, and then send them the link automatically. And the beautiful part is that immediately it then sends a DM with a voice note. And I, for every single campaign I run per post, I take an extra 30 seconds and I push the record button on your tool. And I say, "Hey, Frank, I just saw that," or I usually don't use a first name. "Hey, I just saw that you requested the specific guide they requested. I'm really hoping you get value out of it. Definitely wait till minute 22. So I make it very specific. And then I'll say, "By the way, if you're a business owner doing more than $1 million a year," and then I plant the seed for the call to action afterward. That ability to do that at scale without having to do that one by one by one is so powerful, but it also overcomes the problem of being inauthentic and being true to yourself. So you can have a very canned first message and then follow up with pure value, like authenticity. And so what you guys are doing there is awesome. And I know you have added AI voice abilities, which I don't really understand yet, but do you have anything to say on terms of like, this dynamic of how do you keep your messaging authentic despite automation?
Yeah, for sure. I think it comes back to the same thing. It's like just using it well. Like, and that's the thing. Like anyone can go on and automate, which makes it really easy. And that's why there's just so much shit on LinkedIn, because it's so easy to automate. And it's the same with emails. You know, I get them all the time. It's an email that's like, "Oh, great work on the YouTube recording today." And it's like, no, like haven't, you know, it's just like, just, and there's such a like low standard. And it's just things like that that just elevate your quality. And it's just like a simple, simple win. Like the voice notes. And again, it comes back to trust as well. When they can hear your voice, there's just there's no quicker way to build trust. Because if you think about, you know, like the characters that you have on a keyboard, you know, everyone has the same characters, you know, that they're using, and you can use them differently. But your voice is something that is completely unique to you. There's no one else with the same voice as you. So they see the, you know, like you say, you know, you're doing the lead magnets and they're, you know, they're commenting on 3 every single day, right? And they, you know, they're getting sent, "Here's the thing, you know, here's the thing." They're just like, maybe I won't even open it. Like, it's just there and it's just lost, right? Or it's like, you know, I'll look at it, lead it, you know, forget. But then it's like, suddenly I have a voice note and it's like, the guy that's made this, that's got like 1,000 comments, has actually just like reached out to me. And he's actually said like, oh, hey man, like, I hope this was helpful for you. Like, you know, this is, and it's just like, that is just not something that you can really do. And it's like, ultimately, like, whilst you are sending the same thing to everyone, which I think is like tying back into the authenticity thing, it's like, even just it, in a way, it doesn't matter how you do it, right? It's like, it doesn't matter if you typed out the cold email yourself that made someone go, oh, that was perfect timing, or if it was automated, because ultimately they're getting the same value from it regardless of where it came from. And I think the same goes for the voice notes. Like, that just like 30 seconds that they can just hear your voice, be like, well, this guy's cool. You know, like, this guy's actually a human, like, stand out from all the other ones. It just, yeah, makes a huge difference. The AI voice notes, very interesting as well. I always go back and forth between the two of them, because it's just like, you know, with the, to give some context, there's two different options for the voice notes in the platform. So you can either record one voice message in the way that you've been doing. You go, oh, hey, saw you commented on this. Hope you got some value from it, by the way, however you want to do it. Or you can use the AI voice. We use 11 Labs. And essentially the way it works is you can then personalize the voice notes. So if you want to include the first name, you want to include the company name, or even compliment their most recent post, something a little more advanced like that, then it essentially will just take the text and those variables and then be able to speak them somewhat in your voice, because it's based off a sample of your voice. And the reason I always go between the two is because it's like, okay, would I rather it be personalized, you know, do the like tick box of having their name, or actually be in my own voice? And that's why, yeah, why there's always that constant go back and forth. But the fact that it's even possible to do personalized voice notes at scale is just absolutely absurd.
Yeah, it's only going to get more crazy. Okay, so to pivot a little bit from the original conversation, I want to get into kind of the controversy of what's been happening on LinkedIn, because I know that many automation founders, companies are getting banned, essentially, from LinkedIn. I don't know if banned is the right word, but can you help everyone who's listening understand what's happened over the last couple of weeks and how that's impacted you guys?
Yeah, so what was it, maybe 6 or 7 days ago, really, like, it was probably the most notable news I've seen on LinkedIn in a while, where it felt like the most people on LinkedIn were looking in the same direction. Maybe it just felt like that because we're both just like so deep into B2B. Maybe no one else gives a shit, but it's, probably not us, but when Apollo.io and Seamless, got restricted from LinkedIn, which just means their company pages got taken down. And obviously it's like, it took a second for people to kind of like realize, but you know, what would have happened is like someone was like, it would have been in a link somewhere and then someone goed on it. And then it's like invalid page is usually what happens, what you see like on the front end. And then someone posted about it. I can't remember who the first person was, but the post just went absolutely just crazy. And then, you know, like by the end of the day, there was 1,000 articles, you know, talking about it, like long form content talking about it. Like, it's a bit of a cat and mouse game with LinkedIn and automation. So there's like, you know, it's not LinkedIn's favorite thing.
Before you keep going though, yeah, I want to just give people context to like why this is a big deal. Cause it sounds like, well, what's a big deal? Like, two random software companies got their company banned. Cause I think you're right. You and I are so deep. We know exactly who these people are and what these mean. So just for context, Apollo.io is like the 3,000 pound gorilla, essentially, when it comes to AI outbound over the last, you know, at least 5 years, yeah, if not more. And they have a central database that has all of the outbound data you would want for list building. And then they built an outbound platform to email, so sequences and automations to email individuals from those lists. So you can pull up an exact ideal customer profile list based upon their different filters, and then you can send these emails out. And they do other things as well, but that's essentially the crux of it. So they're not like a small fry company, and they get a lot of their data, I believe, from LinkedIn.
Yeah,
and so they're scraping LinkedIn. And then where this gets really kind of tricky is that a lot of cold email agencies like myself rely on Apollo for the data that we use to generate the lists to build out the campaigns that we do for our clients. And we were using, up until a few weeks ago, Appify, this tool, or other people use different web scraping tools, to then go to Lit to Apollo's free page. And then we would scrape the Apollo page for free for basically $120 a month through the Appify web scraper. And this is how we would build everything out. So when they got banned from LinkedIn, it was like, whoa. It was like these guys get banned, anybody can get banned. And more importantly, the question it raises is like, is there a war going on? Is LinkedIn about to raise like some big, like competitive outbound thing? Obviously they have Sales Navigator, which is kind of like a database competitive to Apollo. So are they going to go further in that direction? Or are they just putting up a moat? So it opened up this big set of questions, and it also really hurt a lot of people. And then Apollo last week prevented scraping. So they prevented, they changed their terms of service, they changed their paywall, they changed a bunch of things. And we're not sure if it's in response to LinkedIn or if it just happened to be coincidental, but there's all these major changes across the outbound world in these big database providers. And there's clearly a war going on and clearly a war against automation, because obviously we'll talk about how they banned your account as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, like you say, like Apollo is a like huge enterprise. Like they are an absolute behemoth. You know, there's like no one that's ever like gone anywhere near B2B and doesn't know Apollo, which is why it was like such big news. I think there's a few things that go into it really. Like, you know, like I said, it's like a bit of a cat and mouse thing. You know, LinkedIn, they hate automation, but at the same time, it makes them like a bunch of money, because every time someone starts automating, okay, how do I send twice the number of messages? Well, I get sales now. And then it's like, that's an extra $100 a month for LinkedIn, right? So it's like, you know, we don't like automation. We want to keep platform genuine and, you know, all this stuff. And so it's like, but this was like, you know, kind of a big one, right? You know, it's like something this notable hasn't happened in a while. And I think one of the big things is that, like you say, Apollo directly competes with SalesNav. They're, you know, they provide a database and LinkedIn provide a database. And like you say, all of the Apollo data is just from LinkedIn SalesNav. And the reason for that is that SalesNav is the only platform where the user updates their data. And that's the reason why it's so powerful, is because the first thing you do when you get a new job is you go on your phone and you change your like LinkedIn, all that stuff, right? On your profile, it's like update your experience, update your job title, because everyone's like climbing the ladder on LinkedIn and you want to have people see that on your page. And that means that the data is the most accurate. It refreshes the most often, which is like the kind of the superpower that it has. And then, like you say, you know, Apollo and all these other tools scrape from that. So then if people just go and use Apollo instead of SalesNav, then it's like, you know, that promotes people. And like you say, even it's even like, are they promoting people more? Do they want more people on LinkedIn compared to sending emails? Because like Apollo is primarily used as a email database, right? You know, to get the emails, but that all just comes from the sales owners. And so, you know, could you expect to see more people now like shifting over to LinkedIn as LinkedIn try aggressively, obviously, to stop this? But I think, to be honest, the reality of the situation is that they can't do shit, because, you know, this is something that's been happening. Like automation tools have been around for a decade and a half on LinkedIn. You know, automation on LinkedIn has been around for pretty much as long as LinkedIn have. You know, there's these tools like, you know, your Dripify and your Duck Soup that have been around for like, you know, like coming up on a decade, right? And it's like, you know, they have like company pages on LinkedIn, and it's like, you know, they don't make too much noise, but they're just there and everyone knows about them and LinkedIn know about them. And they're not really doing too much. And the only way that they can actually stop this from happening really is by stopping the marketing. And that's what they're doing, by restricting these accounts. And that's what's happened to us. So again, to give some more context, just over the last week, you know, we're obviously not quite Apollo sized, but we had our company pages and founder accounts removed. So my account, my partner's account, got removed from LinkedIn. And the reason for that is because, I mean, there's a couple of things that go into this. Obviously, you know, automation is against terms of services, right? And everyone knows that. And that's always been a constant. But then what's actually changed? What have they done this to us? Especially when there's, like we spoke about earlier, there's 200 other automation tools and they all have company pages and, you know, all this stuff, right? And The reason for that is because the only way they can stop us is with the marketing, as I said, and we market so loud on LinkedIn. There's no other like software, there's no other automation tool founders that would be as obnoxious as we have been in the last 3 months. I mean, we have like 2 to 3 people going viral 2 to 3 times a week, every single week since December, you know, since 3 months ago in December, right? And I think that's really, I think we were almost just taking the piss too much because we use we leverage LinkedIn almost exclusively to grow our user base from Prosp. So, you know, it's a LinkedIn tool and all of the users come from LinkedIn using the tool in one way or another, you know, be that outbound or be there with the lead magnets. And I think they just think like, okay, these guys are just growing so fast, making so much noise. The easiest way for us to shut this down is to stop their marketing because it's not like they can turn the tool off. They can't detect the tool. So how do they do it? You know, stop the founder's marketing, right? And here we are.
Yeah. So that brings up a question because I was on a call, I guess you could call it, with another cold outbound expert email guy, not a LinkedIn guy. But his concern is that, and honestly, it scared me into pausing all my campaigns. So right now, all my campaigns are paused on Prosp because I'm concerned about this. And so I know other people are thinking about this well. So I think this is a good opportunity for you to help assuage, I don't know if that's the right pronunciation of the word, but our fears of, I've spent a decade building out the LinkedIn profile I have, right? It is critical to my world. And anybody who else is a thought leader on LinkedIn knows that, you know, all your cold outbound advertising, your emails, everyone comes to the LinkedIn profile and will look around. And so like we talked about before, it's a beacon of trust. It's actually the most human thing you can show professionally outside of something like a podcast or something like this. So it truly is the landing page. So there's massive value built up in that profile. And so to be banned from it, as you know, is a real just shot to the heart. And so there's real concerns, at least I have, that that if I'm using an automation tool, and I've used everyone from, you know, HeyReach to, you know, LinkedIn Helper to you guys, you know, and I've tried many over the last several years, but in the last week, given the things that have transpired around these bans, I'm personally concerned. And you know, because I've reached out to you personally, I'm like, hey, am I okay to keep using this, you know? And so the question is, you're saying that LinkedIn cannot detect that we're using it.
Yeah.
Can you help explain how they cannot detect it and why it is safe for people to use it? Because obviously I understand they targeted you specifically because you are marketing an automation tool that they don't like. And so, but the natural question is, well, then doesn't that also apply to anybody using that tool? And so how do you answer that objection?
Yeah, absolutely. So really they're just, I think like you say, just two separate entities, you know, and one entity is using an automation tool, ours or anyone else's. And the other one is owning one. So actually you don't have to look back that far to see the last time that this happened. So a friend of mine, the owner of a tool called Sales Robot, not too many months ago, same thing happened to him, a lot quieter because it just, you know, wasn't happening right around the same time that this huge Apollo thing happened. But the same thing, you can go and look at Sales Robot and you can actually see that there's about, I think there's 30 or 40 employees of Sales Robot. And one of the things they even said to us in the message is, we know that you're the founders of this tool, so we've restricted your accounts. So we have employee accounts that are using the tool right now. Not using the tool. Using LinkedIn right now with no issues. I mean, using the tool as well, obviously. And it's the same, like I said, with Sales Robot, where they just restrict the founder accounts because that's the easiest way that they can see to prevent the marketing and prevent the growth of the tool. But they can't restrict, you know, even the employee accounts, you know, we're even not even talk about the users, but even just the employee accounts are safe because they're kind of, it's not in LinkedIn's, you know, interest to ban users, you know, from like a revenue standpoint, right? So that's the other thing. And then it just comes down to like the way that we've set up the tool. So, you know, that's one thing that's really a separate entity. But the second thing is like account security with the tool. And any LinkedIn automation tool should be built with that at the forefront. And it was always like that for us, you know, coming onto a crowded market, you know, recently, it was like, if you have even a single, even if you have 1% of the number of issues that these bigger tools have, then you're never going to make it, right? You're never going to get to that like critical mass when suddenly like it all starts making sense. Because if you have even one person of like 1,000 or, you know, 10,000 having an issue, then it's like word spreads fast when it's a small, you know, group of users. So for us, it's, you know, things like as soon as you connect the account, you're getting an IP that's, you know, specific to your country. And as if like, so I've got LinkedIn open on my phone, I've got LinkedIn open on my laptop, two different IPs, right? Things like, you know, never sending over the limits is really the primary indicator for LinkedIn. And the then you have just the way that you're sending. And this stuff is maybe a bit more of a yawn-a-thon for anyone listening. But for anyone that is interested in the account safety stuff, essentially it's just about how can I simulate human behavior as effectively as possible. So with our tool, it turns off, turns on. It runs, you know, not kind of all day long. You have it set at very specific intervals. We have a lot of randomization, so we don't even let users determine the delay after the connection is accepted and then the first message being sent, again, to kind of simulate human activity. And one thing that LinkedIn have actually started doing recently, which is different to ever before, is they look at your messaging itself. So they're not just looking at the number of messages you're sending. They're not just looking at how fast you're sending. They're actually looking at the messages now. And one thing, because the tool has AI and has the voice notes, those are essentially things that the algorithm is not able to detect, because suddenly you have this huge variance in your messaging and you have these voice notes that haven't been automated. So they haven't developed the infrastructure to then kind of, you know, go at that. And obviously, like I said, you know, the tool would be dead without account safety at the try. So that really for us is the key, but it's always a tricky sell when it's like, well, how come you aren't on LinkedIn? I was like, you know, if it's so safe, how come you aren't on LinkedIn? Right. But like you say, it's the marketing and then the use itself, two different entities.
So are you, once you get banned with your, because I know there's like an ID check type of like verification process on LinkedIn. Are you just done? Like, how do you save yourself at this point?
I'll get the account back. I will have it back. They said we can have it back if we shut things down. So obviously I'll get it back on the other side. But it's they have different kind of restriction levels. If you get a restriction due to automation, like for example, if you jump on an automation tool and you go, yeah, I'm going to send 800 connections a day, and that's why a lot of people have issues, because it's like, oh, I don't have to do this myself. Why don't I just send 800 messages, right? And then obviously LinkedIn look at that. And the different type of things that happen with automation, almost every single time you get a warning. So a little thing comes up and it goes, we've detected that you're using a third-party tool. And then you just have to accept the terms of service. Most people at that point, you then just go, yes, turn everything off for a few weeks and then it's fine. Or you can just stop at that point, you know, whatever your preference is. But that's the automation thing. That's what you see if you get a restriction from using automation badly, I'll stress. Mm-hmm. But with the one like that we get, it's a bit more of a sort of a sternly worded email from LinkedIn, and everything goes a bit dark on the app.
What does it say? Well, what does that email say?
It says the subject line is we're not happy with you.
It says that?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't say that. I can't remember exactly what it said, but it's like the headline is like you know, you fuckers, clearly the founders.
You rat bastard.
Yeah, it's something along those lines. It's stern. It's definitely stern. Yeah.
Mm. So, you know, when you say you're going to get it back on the other side, you mean after you stop this company, or what do you mean on the, like, what's the other side here?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, if you look at a tool called Lemlist, I'm sure you're familiar with that one. The founder is a French guy called Guillaume. And if you look at his LinkedIn account, I think he has about 12,000 followers right now. And that's the sixth LinkedIn account he's had. He's had six different accounts, and every single one of them has got up to however, you know, whatever number of followers is. And there he is again, you know, after so long. So there's different things that you can do, but yeah, it's not the last time.
What is he doing?
LinkedIn.
Is he just like getting banned and then restarts from scratch and then builds a new account and then gets banned again? Like, is that what's happening?
Pretty much. I mean, that's like LinkedIn is a formula. Like, you know, like he's the founder of like a, you know, huge enterprise. Like, it's pretty easy for him to build up a following. But yeah, that's that's pretty much what's happening.
And so he finds there's so much value in LinkedIn that despite all the bans, he still keeps coming back for more, knowing there's huge risk they're banned again.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's just like, for us, it's like the account is, you know, like we can market elsewhere, right? You know, it's just like the tool is of so much more value. Like our value proposition isn't our LinkedIn accounts. Like it's having this insane tool that, you know, lets people do amazing things with LinkedIn. And it's, you know, it's the same for him. Like he's not going to shut down the tool because LinkedIn gave him a slap on the wrist, right?
Yeah, it's fascinating. So you believe that as long as, you know, you guys are doing all of this special magic in the background to restrict total sends, restrict certain activities at a certain frequency or a certain like predictable pattern, you think as long as you follow those best practices that are kind of preset in your tool, that you don't think people are going to get in trouble?
100%. And, you know, we have the data to prove it. You know, we're coming up on 1,200 users and we're not having anyone run into any issues. A couple of things I would say, don't use multiple automation tools at once. And like I said earlier, don't take the piss with the sending limits. There's just a few things that LinkedIn look at. The IP is one of those things. A huge percentage of our costs are the proxies. You know, they have the AI as well, but the proxies are something that's absolutely crucial. It's like, for example,
can you describe that to people? What is a proxy?
Yeah. So essentially, you know, when you send anything from anywhere or just anytime you use a device, you have an IP address. There's just like the kind of digital, you know, kind of like ID of the device that you're using. And a lot of people, when they kind of like, you know, like cheaper tools, or not even using an automation tool, but if you just go and log into like your friend's account on LinkedIn, then suddenly you're using a different IP, and then you go log in from another device and there's a different IP, and it's always changing, right? And that's something that they look at because it's coming from a different digital location. And the proxy that we have essentially gives you a digital location, and it gives you there's a couple of things that are really important. It's static, which just means that it doesn't change. It's just one, it's yours, and that's it, right? So it's just the same. So it's like, right. Yeah. If you think about it, you just have to think again, like, okay, what does it look like? So it's like, how often do you get a new phone? How often do you get a new laptop? Not that often, right? So it's like, if your IP is changing every week, then it's like, you know, that's a hard thing to explain because you're not getting a new phone. I know I'm not, unfortunately. So that's the first thing. And also, we don't share IPs as well. A lot of tools, like you can actually get away with lumping a lot of people onto one IP. But with us, it's just one IP for every single user. Not the most cost effective for us. But again, like I said, breaking into the market, you know, only like a year ago, safety is far more important than the you know, the like margin cost on the software, right? So it's like you can actually lump on 20 people on the same IP. But then if one person is taking a piss, and then the LinkedIn can look at that IP, and then the entire IP can get blacklisted. So again, it's just that, you know, and it's just like, subtle things like this that just happen in the background that keep the account safe.
I know we're basically out of time here. Last question is, so I'm using a virtual assistant based in Poland, of all places. And oftentimes I have her go through old DMs and messages, but also I don't like the AI commenting so much. I haven't tried yours, so maybe that's where the answer is. But I have her come up with her own comments to these people's posts. And she does use a proxy for over here and in the US, but I'm just curious, do you think there's a risk? Is it actually more risky to have her logging in via that versus your tool? What do you think about that? Or her and your tool?
In a way, it's the same. You know, I've seen people that have, that just use the LinkedIn manually, and they've got we've detected that you're using an automation tool, because like I said, it's not about, you know, where it's coming from or who's doing it. It's just about what's being done, you know? So it's like, if I suddenly go on and like, I can bang out, you know, 200 DMs, I'm going to get like a warning, like they're going to look at the account. And it's the same, you know, same goes with this. It's like, if you have a VA that goes on and then just starts going crazy, like, you know, if you have an account that's not being used and then suddenly you're sending 400 connections, then you know, you're always going to run into an issue, because it's not about like who's doing it. It doesn't matter if it's sent automatically or if it's sent manually. It's just about, you know, like respecting those limits. I would say if you are using VA, definitely the system that you have got set up, use a proxy is the best way to do it. As long as you do that, be completely fine. There's a lot of people doing it.
In a proxy to my location in the United States, essentially.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. So you're saying that fundamentally, there's no way for LinkedIn to know that the comment or the message or the DM or the like or whatever you're doing was initiated programmatically from a non-human.
That's right. That's right.
That's why, I mean, how is that possible? Wouldn't they know that, okay, I just saw a click happen. That didn't come from a human mouse. That came from there's no way for them to know?
Well, I mean, if you'd probably have to speak to our engineers, but if you think about, what's actually happening, the mechanism, it's like they're just seeing that buttons are being clicked and things are happening and they're seeing that like messages being sent. And all we're doing is doing that. You know, we're just like essentially clicking the button. It's just not a dude. It's just our tool that's going on and clicking the button to send the message. So, like you said, it's you're just doing the same thing, but not doing it yourself.
Fascinating. Well, I know you got to go. You're over time here. So where can people find you guys online? And now that you're not on LinkedIn for the time being, where can they find you directly if they want to schedule a call to try this tool out?
Yeah, the best place is go to the website, head over to prosp.ai. We also have a little chat on the website. We're super active in there. Shoot us a message. We're cool dudes. Jump in the Slack community as well. I don't know if we can link that somewhere. I'm sure we can. Slack's a great place.
Yeah, send me the link.
Yeah. Jump in the Slack. We got a great community in there. So jump in. It's a lot of fun.
And you spell it prosp.ai, prosp.
That's right.
AI.
That's right.
Where did that come from, that name?
It's just short for prospect, really. That's where it came from. All right. We're all about making things easier.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks, Alfie. So again, find Alfie, prosp.ai. If you guys have any questions, I'm sure they would love to jump on a call with you. I'm loving their tool. I'm going to go turn it back on right after this call because I feel secure now. And we'll see you guys on the flip side on the next podcast. Thanks a lot. See ya.